So today we're going to be talking about sales in the continuation of our Freelance Business Systems webinar. Now, in this series on Freelance Business Systems, we're over the hump now in terms of how many different departments we're covering, but also in terms of the stuff that I know that you guys are a little like less interested in both hearing about and actually doing, and into the stuff that I don't want to say matters exactly, but that you love to hear about, or at least you know is really going to be what moves the needle on your business. And so we talk about it a lot. So particularly today, we are going to talk about sales. We're then going to talk about marketing and also promotion, or PR is another word for it. And one of the things I'm going to talk about a little bit today is the different overlapping areas of those three things, marketing, PR, and sales, but not too much, because we're going to spend a lot of time diving into each of them in their own webinar. So in particular today, one of the things that I want to talk about is this idea of sales as something with not just a strategy exactly, but this idea that we're doing in our whole Freelance Business System series of sales as a department, sales as something with objectives that it needs to meet, sales how it looks not in our businesses, but in something more like a company with employees who go to offices and wear button-down shirts from, you know, Brooks Brothers and ties and whatnot, okay? And as we go into that, first I want to talk about, as we do in every one of these business systems webinars, what are the main functions or roles or purposes of a sales department. Then we're going to look at a couple different things. We're going to look at this idea of the sales pipeline and both how it looks for other companies and also how it can look for you. I'm going to give you a number of different images to look at in terms of how other people have done their sales pipelines, but for other industries to inspire you, because I don't, obviously on the internet it's hard to find these things in the first place, writers talking about their sales and their strategies and things like that, but particularly for somebody to provide a screenshot of their actual sales pipeline is basically non-existent. So because I don't use a lot of the software tools that are out there, I have picked some screenshots from a couple different ones to show you what it looks like, to help you imagine what it would look like for yourself. So after we talk about sales pipelines, there's going to be some sort of keywords that I talk about throughout, and we're going to have a couple little buzzword breaks, as I call them, throughout the webinar today, because there's a lot of things that you may or may not have heard thrown around online, such as inbound marketing or inbound sales, something that we're going to talk about. And I want to talk about what they mean more specifically in our context, because they can really be words that are so frequently used that they cease to have meaning. And as we do that, I'm also going to look at this idea of, as I mentioned, what is the difference between sales and marketing? Where do you draw that line? And why it's important to draw that line, because we so often get focused on the marketing side, right? How often do I hear people telling me, oh, Gabby, I need to finish my website before I do any pitches, or can you please look at my LinkedIn profile? And the thing is that marketing needs to be separate from sales, and there's different activities of each. It's not just that marketing needs to be separate from sales, because sales is when you're actually closing the deals and getting the money, and marketing is just the stuff that you do before that happens, but also because they're separate functions that you can do concurrently. And so that's really the big thing that we're going to look at today, is this idea of what constitutes sales that you need to be thinking of in a day-to-day way. And we'll wrap up with some simpler sort of takeaways for food for thought for what to get going on that. In this webinar, I just want to warn you, in case this is what you're here for, I'm not going to be talking about specific sales plans for yourself with your pitching for a couple different reasons. So on the one hand, what exact strategy every single one of you should do is going to be related to your larger goals. And because this is more of a teaching webinar rather than a coaching conversation, anything I say in this webinar is going to be, like I said, something that is this basis, this foundation upon which you build in relation to your personal situation. So I wouldn't be able to say this is the sales strategy that all travel writers should use, because we're not all the same. We don't have the same goals in terms of what we want our income number to be. We don't have the same goals in terms of how much time we want to put in. And we certainly don't all have the same goals in terms of what published writing we want to be putting out into the world, whether that's in terms of what the actual content is or what the format is, vis-a-vis whether it's online, in books, in magazines, on company or tourism board websites versus on editorial websites. Okay, so what I'm going to go through in this webinar is in many ways much more important than any of that. Because as you're going to see, the thing with sales strategy and sales goals is that if you just go out there, and I see this happen really, really a lot with people who want to be freelance writers. If you just go out there and start pitching X, whatever X is, right? Maybe it's letters of introduction for trade magazines. Maybe it's custom content letters for companies. Maybe it's just applying to gigs that you've seen online, or maybe it's sending pitch letters to magazines. If you just go out there and X without being sure that the way you're doing X is the most productive, or that X is really the thing that's going to get you your goals, then what's going to happen is you're going to end up somewhere, which is not what you expected. That somewhere might be that you don't get any responses to your pitches. That can absolutely happen, whatever type of pitches they are. And I often see that that happens either because there wasn't enough time spent honing that process of what's the best way to target these potential customers of yours. But it can also be because your heart simply wasn't really there, because it's not really the thing that you want to do. It's kind of something that you heard you should do, that maybe somebody told you you should do, that you read about and you thought that's how travel writing works, something like that. But the other way you can end up somewhere which isn't really how you planned is that if you aren't really up on what your options are in terms of the different marketplaces, and marketplaces might be, again, something in terms of writing for companies versus writing for tourism boards websites versus writing for editorial websites versus writing for magazines. And then there's different types of magazines. There can be trade magazines versus very high-end consumer magazines versus regional or topically specific magazines, right? So if you're not familiar with these different markets and their advantages and disadvantages, then you might end up with some work, but it's going to be work that doesn't fit the life you wanted to have for yourself, your sales goals, the types of writing you want to be doing, and all those things. So, one of the things that I'm going to talk about today that I think is so important that even honestly, I have to say, I think I don't even talk about this enough, and I've been talking it with somebody in our full coaching program quite a bit, is this idea of what are the potential costs of the different types of marketing you're doing, not just what is it going to get you. Because every time we choose to go after a specific type of work, we might be, like I said, pitching, jobs on job boards, for instance, okay? But that's time that we could be spending not just pitching other people, but also that's time that we could be spending learning about other things to see if that's what we want to do, or in order to pitch better, or something like that. So today, as we talk about sales and sales strategy, you're going to see through some of the different images that I'm going to show you. I've pulled a bunch of different charts. I mentioned sales pipelines earlier, but I have a lot of different things to show you. You're going to see this idea really of the cost, whether it's in terms of dollars or in terms of time, that pursuing different types of sales is going to incur for you as a business. And we talked about this a lot in several other webinars in this series, but especially the human resource one. In a solopreneur freelance business, you are the only worker. I mean, you might be outsourcing to some different types of people for different types of thing, whether it's bookkeeping or research or whatever, but you are the only one who's going to do the actual production work, the actual writing work. And so your time is literally the most valuable resource your business has. Okay, I think about this every single day. Every time I'm about to do something, I think about what are all the other things that need to get done that I could maybe be doing with this time? Is this really the thing that I should be doing in this moment? Is there something else that should be taking priority right now? And we think with sales often, whether you're again pitching magazines or applying to online jobs or whatever that type of sale you are seeking, we're going to talk more about what sales is. We often think, oh, well, I'm doing something that could lead to more work, so this is a good use of my time. But what I want to dig into today is how to really decide, how to really determine, how to look at a lot of different things, what sales are worth you pursuing, how to pursue them, and what are the aspects really of making a sale that we need to think about. Because I think that, maybe some people kind of know this in the back of their mind, but salespeople get paid like a crap ton of money, okay? I mean, again, I'm sure we all kind of know this, and the figures in terms of what salespeople get paid are going to vary from industry to industry. But by way of example, I was just talking with someone about this a couple of days ago when I was in Portland for the World Domination Summit. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with something called incentive travel. It's actually a really interesting part of the travel industry. It's basically tours-ish. They're not always like guided tours exactly, but trips, let's call it. Amazing, amazing trips that are sometimes a week long, sometimes longer, but just the best, most luxury, most high-end, most interesting options, most curated type of thing that are organized for the top salespeople in different organizations. So these are the kind of things where literally a company is going to have set up the most ostentatious, amazing, out of a movie safari in Africa, where every time you get back to the tent at the end of the day, somebody is like standing there with a silver tray for you with, you know, a glass of iced tea and a perfect little bonbon, okay? These type of trips. There's a whole industry around planning these trips. They're called incentives, if you want to look it up, just for top earning salespeople. Okay, that's how important these top salespeople are. It's not just that they get paid a lot. There's also people within a company whose job is to plan these ridiculous trips for these top earning salespeople. That's how important these salespeople are. So I know that sales is kind of like this icky, gross, dirty word in freelancing generally, but particularly for writers. And we often fall back on this trope of like the introverted writer who doesn't like to talk to people. But if you want to have a business, and when I say if you want to have a business, I mean if you want to be compensated in a way that you are able to do this as your full-time profession, okay, that's what I mean there. If you say, I don't want to have a business, I just want to be a freelancer, that's what I mean when I say if you want to have a business. Somebody, and it's going to have to be you, is going to have to be that like much, you know, feather fanned Egyptian godlike salesperson, okay, and do the work to get there, even if it's not that you want to earn a lot of money, right? Even if your biggest goal for yourself is just to be able to like F off to the coast of Croatia and just do your work in the most unbothered way in a lovely little Airbnb rental by the water and not have to talk to anybody ever, you're going to have to set up specific writing gigs that allow you to do that, okay? So we're going to talk about how one of the most important things in sales is that it supports the goals of the company. But I just want to make sure that that's clear up front, that sales is what gets you whatever you want out of your business. If you want to earn work fewer hours, if you want to not have to interface with annoying people, if you want to just have clients who are like the most easygoing, chill people who you just send them whatever and they pay you for it, if you want to have relationships with editors who give you really important feedback on your work and help move your writing along, if you want to ghostwrite books, whatever it is that you want for your writing business, sales is the real thing that gets you there, okay? Now, as I say that, I'm going to give you a little rundown, and I know I say a little, but it's actually kind of long, of what are sort of the baseline definitions of a sales team. We've done a big slide like this. I know it's super wordy. I'm going to read it to you in each of our webinars in this series, and I'm going to do it this time, but this one is a little different. Okay, so usually in our Freelance Business System series, what we've looked at is, you know, what does a legal department really do? What does a human resource department really do? But the thing is, I think we all kind of get at a basic level sales and what it is. So what I did when I put together this particular slide today was I actually looked up a couple different things, and it was more along the line of what is the role of a sales team or of their manager in order to get this information to share with you. So you'll notice that it's a little different. It's a little less definition-y than we've been doing on this slide in the other parts of this series. If you haven't caught the other parts in this series, I will say I know that sales and hitting, you know, getting sales to come in easier and all those things are really like probably the sexiest part of this entire business systems MBA style webinar that we're doing. But I'm going to talk a lot about goals, and goals are really hard, particularly numeric goals, to have a firm grasp on if you haven't followed our finance and accounting webinars that we've already looked at. Some of the stuff we're going to talk about is going to tie into the tech stuff that we talked about last week. Also a little bit of human resources, but then we're also going to do a management sort of executive level webinar at the end that's really going to tie into this as well. So those are some other ones that will help you understand this if you feel like some of the things I'm saying in this webinar you need some more background for. Okay, so the first one I've got up here is about a sales manager. And I put this one first because I really like the very plain way that this is stated at the beginning. A sales manager is responsible for meeting the sales targets of the organization through effective planning and budgeting. Now, interesting things here. So I think we can kind of imagine that the person who runs the sales team is in charge of making sure that their team meets the targets that have been set by somebody, right? But I like this part about that they're responsible for doing it through effective planning and budgeting. Because I think a lot of us, when we go out there and we're thinking about pitching magazines or, pitching to companies or whatever, we focus so much on the pitches, right? Or maybe if it's in the case of magazine, we focus so much on making sure the idea is a good match. But why are we pitching that idea? Why are we pitching that magazine? Why are we pitching the company? What is that one act or 5 acts or 25 acts supposed to get us in the long run? Are we pitching those things because they're low-hanging fruit? They're the easy target. Are we pitching those things because they're going to take us to the next level? Are we pitching those things simply to check a box that we've got to place an article from a story that we went on? What is the actual plan behind that particular bit of sales pitching that you're doing? Okay. The other part here is budgeting. Now, as I mentioned on the last slide, when we talk about budgeting and this sales talk today, I'm going to be really more talking about time in a lot of cases, okay? And particularly when we're looking at budgeting your sales time, that's time that is going to come out of a lot of other things. Your time as a writer, some of it has to be producing, right? That's doing the actual writing work. Some of it has to be on things like, sending invoices or keeping up on emails from editors or doing edits on assignments that already came in. And then there's going to be a fraction which is left for sales. So we also have to budget of that fraction of the time that's left for us. What is going to be spent on what? Okay, what proportion of the time is going to go to what type of sales, as in like what type of business we want to close, whether that's magazines or websites or whatever. And also what part of that time is going to go to what part of the sales process. Okay, and we're going to get into the parts of that in a little bit. So a sales manager devises strategies and techniques, we're going to look at those as well, necessary for achieving the sales targets. Okay, so part of being your own ULLC sales manager is to plan and budget and find the strategies and techniques that fit into that allow you to meet your targets. Okay, now I like these next couple ones because they talk about the idea of the sales manager and what you do when you have people under you. But I feel like it's really useful for us as freelancers actually to think in this out-of-body sort of schizophrenic way about the different hats. So in the first webinar in this series, which I know was months and months ago now, right, we looked at this idea that when you decide to start a business, and again, by that I mean something that earns money to pay for your livelihood, okay, when you decide to start a business, you are tacitly or intentionally agreeing to take on, to sign a job contract for all of these different roles. And until somebody else fills those roles, you are doing all of them. So even if it's just you, you are still both the sales manager and the salesperson. You are schizophrenically, or whatever you want to call it, wearing both of those hats. Okay, so it's important to think about both sides of this because we have to think about how we are supervising our own actions, right? And we'll get into more of this in the management webinar. But this idea that we're not just the one doing the work, we also have to fill that role of the person doing the strategy, checking what's working. So it says the sales manager's duty is to map potential clients and generate leads for the organization. We'll talk a lot more about this in pipelines, okay? It's the sales manager's duty to ensure his team is delivering desired results. Supervision is essential. Track their performances. Make sure each one is living up to the expectations of the organization. Ask them to submit a report of what they've done throughout the week or the month, okay? So I talk a lot about tracking time. We talked a lot about this in the operations webinar, which is a really important one if you haven't caught that. And tracking not just time, but also performance for sales is key because I have so many people come and tell me, I did blah, 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 and it didn't work. And I asked them what they really did. And maybe they did 3 pitches and they knew all of those pitches weren't their best pitches, but they didn't do any more pitches based on that knowledge of what they could do better next time. Okay. So tracking, and we'll see this more as we get into the specific job functions of the salespeople, but tracking performance and having that record of what has been done specifically for your sales work, for your pitching, is absolutely crucial to making any sort of difference between where you're at now and where you want to be. If we don't know what we did that didn't work as much as we wanted, we have absolutely no way to change it. Okay? Next one here. At the practical granular level, a sales strategy is anything that can get a company more sales. The reason companies use multiple sales strategies that work use multiple, something's missing here, but that's the reason companies use multiple sales strategies to work at different stages of their customer's buying journey. We're going to talk a little bit about customer buying today, but that's more the purview in many ways of marketing. So we're going to get to that next week. But I really like this definition because it highlights an important division between sales and marketing here. A sales strategy is something that gets the company more sales. At a basic level, a sale is when money is exchanged. How much of your time that you think that you're spending on sales or getting more business or whatever is actually being spent on things that will never result in an exchange of money directly? Whether that's LinkedIn or, you know, some form of pitching where, you know, it's not yet resulting in an actual email, or whatever that is, scanning job boards but not actually picking something out and not actually hitting send on that email. We have to really differentiate, again, between sales and marketing. I have a slide just on this, but you have to do both. If you're not actually doing those bits where you are somehow asking for money, you aren't doing sales, you're not going to have money coming in, and you're not going to grow your business. So the number one thing that I see happen with people who get into travel writing, maybe tell me that they're spending a lot of time on their travel writing. I've seen this for years and years. It's one of the reasons that I started this whole company, is that the time that they're saying that they're spending on their travel writing is entirely spent on things that have no potential to result in an exchange of money. So that might be that they are spending a lot of time reading magazines, but never pitching them. It might be that they're spending a lot of time on their blog, but their blog is not set up in a way that it could bring them some income at some point in the future. It might be that they're spending a lot of time on social media following editors, but they're not pitching the editors' ideas. It might be that they're spending a lot of time sprucing up their website, but sprucing up your website is not going to directly lead to money. It might lead to someone coming to you, asking about working with you, at which point they would go into the sales process. But at the time, it's just marketing, okay? So I really like this. It's kind of long, and again, it's not exactly a definition, but I really like this concept here in point number three. So sales operations roles and functions have evolved since their introduction in the 1970s. Now, that right there is mind-blowing. When I saw this, I was like, wait a second. Sales has only been around since the 1970s? That's not possible. But this idea of how sales teams work today has. Now, this is really interesting because if you think about the 1970s, particularly in America, this has been called by many people kind of the rise of the corporation. Now, obviously, there were industrialists from the mechanical era that were around before that, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Henry Ford and, the Model T and things like that. But this idea of the corporation as opposed to like the manufacturing industry, that is much newer. And so this concept of the sales team, as we think of it today, itself is much newer. So what that means is that for millennia and millennia before that, sales was all done in a different way than it's done today. Now, that's interesting for a couple different reasons. A, because it means you don't have to do all this stuff, right? It means there's a different way to do this. It means that you can hang a shingle, wait for people to walk by, and come in and eventually sell stuff. It means also, though, that this huge rise of technology, wealth, all these things that have happened in the more modern post-corporation era have happened because of this. So that's how powerful this sort of sales team oriented approach is. So you can look at it two ways. You can look at it like, oh, well, I can be a cobbler, in a city or a village and hang my shingle and people walk by when their shoes are broken or not, and sometimes I get work. Or you can harness the idea that now we have the internet and now we have the ability to work in a different way. So that's one of the things I like about this. So since the introduction in the 1970s, Neil Rackham, author of Spin Selling, which is a very important sales strategy book. It's not spin as in PR, but spin is an acronym here, writes that he first came upon the concept at Xerox when a new group was created to manage sales planning, compensation, forecasting, and territory design. Group leader J. Patrick Kelly described their duties as all the nasty things that you don't want to do but need to do to make a great sales force. Sorry, all the nasty numbers things, according to Rackham, and his Forward to the Power of Sales Analytics. Now, this is really interesting. So this means that the shift in this corporation era in the 1970s from the previous type of very door-to-door salesman, very intensive, very relationship-building sales to a more scalable model in terms of how few people you need to do a lot of work, which for us as freelancers is really important, comes down to doing all the nasty number things that you don't want to do that you need to do. So that's what one of the things that we're going to look at today is what are those nasty number things? What do they mean for us as freelance writers? The last one here, the broader purpose of sales ops is to enhance sales effectiveness and productivity. To do that, sales ops smooths out processes, right? That's the whole point of these freelance business systems webinars. It's all about processes, right? Makes better use of numbers and research. Gives sales reps what they need to make pitches. That's an interesting one. We'll look at that more later. And performs a variety of other functions. Now, on this topic of a variety of other functions, I've got, I'm just going to skip forward for a second, a whole big slide here that I'm not going to read you everything on here. If it gets there. But I put this in here so that you can see it later. If you've purchased the webinar in the webinar library, you have all the slides. If you're in the coaching program or Dream Buffet program, you'll have all the slides available through the button at the bottom of your resource library. But first, I want to take a second to talk more about these numbers. What kind of numbers are we talking about here? Now, I know even for me on my screen, looking at it in the webinar window, this looks a little small and hard to read. Let me see if I can get it bigger. I think it might also be a little fuzzy. I'm just going to look at my PowerPoint slide for a second to read this to you. So this is one of the, this is just one option, okay? There's a lot of different numbers that you can look at. And I'm going to give you some sort of ideas, inspiration for this, but I really want you guys to look yourself at what numbers make the most sense for you to track in terms of what you physically can do, what you're interested in doing, and what is going to move the needle for you in terms of motivation. But this is just kind of an example of some of the type of numbers that salespeople might look at, okay? So this is closed won versus closed lost opportunity ratio, okay? And so what that means is of all of the opportunities that came in, so for us, that might mean if you're at a conference and you have a long chat with somebody who was sitting next to you during a talk, after the talk about their business and what they're looking for, and it seems like that might mean that might lead to work down the line, that's going to be an opportunity, okay? Or if you go, again, at a conference, for instance, to someone's table, either for speed networking or just generally somebody in the sponsor area, and you talk to that tourism board about what they're doing with their website, and they say, actually, they do use writers for their website, and feel free to send them some pitches, that's an opportunity, all right? So those are the kind of things that count as opportunities here. So what this very sort of interesting and colorful chart is looking at is the percentage of opportunities in each of these different categories that were closed and won versus the ones that were closed as in they kind of got to the end of the line, there was no ability to win that deal, that were lost, okay? And what they've said is that events, lead lists, so that's like buying lists from another source, or partners, so like recommendations from other people, were actually the sources of potential deals, potential opportunities that were most likely to not pan out. Now, I put the slide in here both to talk about, you know, what kind of numbers you can look at and show you how powerful something like that might be to track, but also because I find a lot of this can be relatively transferable to other industries. I also find that sounds like for freelance writers, a relatively appropriate percentage of how much actually closes from conference events or from referrals from other people. Okay, other things that you'll see on here as it gets bigger are marketing and advertising for 21.8%, trade shows for 29%, paid search, so that's like Google search ads, okay, 29%, webinars 32%, email campaigns 43%, general sales generated 57% through the website 61%. That one I actually probably disagree with for writers. Other, I really want to know what that other is for 67%. Facebook, Twitter, and other social 68%, also probably not so much the same for writers. And employee and customer referrals 68%, also probably something that's not quite going to be the same for writers. But do you see how cool this is that you can look at the end of the year when you do your annual review, or quarterly if you want to do a quarterly sales or monthly sales review, you can look at all of the different opportunities that have come to you. You can just list them all and then tag them by their source. And then you can look at each of the opportunities in there and what was the percentage that you actually won from each of those sources. And then you can think about how to budget that most important resource, your time, on these different sources going forward so that you focus on the sources that are bringing you most Not just leads, not just opportunities, okay? But most closed work. But you don't know that if you don't track it, if you don't look at it, and most particularly if you don't compare it kind of internally to the different sources, okay? So this, as I mentioned, you'll get the slides later, but I just wanted to have a list here of the different types of things, whether it's strategies or tactics or actions or whatever you want to call it, that sales teams do. Because I thought this might be effective for people who are like, okay, I get it. Sales is something I have to do. It's very important. But what kind of sales can I do besides pitching? Okay. So these are all of the different things that sales teams are responsible for. Some of them involve data, right? Managing sales data we just talked about, reporting sales and campaign results. So for us, a campaign would be like you have decided that you went on this trip and you're going to put together all of the different pitches from this trip and you're going to send them all out this month. And then at the end, you see, was there a particular type of story idea that went better in terms of actually landing assignments? Was there a particular type of magazine, like maybe more of a tier three versus a tier two, or a magazine that was focused on topics versus regions where you had more success? So that's how you could analyze your own type of sales campaign. But of course, like we looked at with the sales manager, you had to plan that campaign first to be able to measure it later. All right. Now, something that we saw in one of the earlier slides was this idea of maintaining sales collateral. I'm going to get to this in another slide too. Sales forecasting for goal setting. So this ties into a lot of what we talked about in the finance webinar about forecasting, but you can't forecast unless you know your sales history. So let's say that in the last 6 months, you've sent 15 pitches. Not a ton, but we can work with this. You've sent 15 pitches. And you know that five of them didn't get responses, two of them ended up with an assignment, and the remaining eight had no's, but then you can, maybe with four of them, you've continued on and had more conversations with that editor that either have already led to or are going to lead to an assignment going forward, right? So now we have some benchmarks. We know that, you know, 5 out of 15, so that was like one third of our emails, we should just maybe not expect anything to happen. Okay, 2 out of 15, so that's like about a seventh, eighth, like 15% or something like that, are going to result in some work right away. And then let's say another 4 out of those 15, so nearly a third will result in work, but maybe not necessarily from that article that you sent. It might be some more work down the line. So if you know that those are your percentages and you know that in a given month you want to close a certain number of article assignments, you want to have those like in the bag, under your belt, on, you know, on your laptop to be writing, spending your time on, then you know how many pitches now you need to send to make that happen, okay? Now, something else on here that's really interesting that I just want to highlight is this idea of defining sales territories. This is really big for salespeople in kind of like a sales team, sales force kind of setting. They'll split up for a company that's like national, for instance. They might take a country and divide it into geographic regions or maybe into sort of different subgroups based on some other demographics. But for us, we can think of sales territories in a more online setting in terms of different demographics, like what type of writing. So your territories, I'm making air quotes here, might be things like editorial websites, tourism boards, trade magazines, or more granular. So let's say that you are focusing on doing content marketing pitches exclusively for companies, not tourism boards, and your territories might be tour companies. They might be a mix of day tours, food tours, overnight sort of multi-day tours. You might have a separate one for family tours. And if you think about each of these territories, again, air quotes on territories here, differently, then you can do a couple different things. A, you can do that, you know, out-of-body schizophrenic thing, and you can compete against yourself, right? You can say, okay, like which of these territories is going to do best? Like how many can I get for this territory? Oh, I got this many in this other territory. Can I get more for this, you know, the territory that's got less? So that's one way to kind of gamify your sales, is to break it up into these, again, air quotes, territories. So we also talked before, and I said I'm going to come back to this, but this idea of training staff, go-to-market models. You'll see there's a lot of emphasis here on setting something up once that you're going to use again and again. It's not also just about setting something up once, but as you can see down here, I've also bolded this idea of a center of excellence. So this is something where you are really thinking and doing research, whether that's online at, you know, best practices in writing or psychology or persuasive writing or whatever, but you're really thinking about how to make sure that the things you are using for your sales, which in our arena are really going to be primarily email pitches. If you're in person, maybe some personal pitches, or you know, if you're doing content marketing things, you might be on the phone as well, but primarily email pitches, okay? So this is really making sure a lot of these steps, like I said, are really making sure what you're doing at each juncture is the absolute best thing it can be, so that each potential sale, each opportunity, each potential client has the best chance of turning into something for you, okay? So part of that comes down to this idea of the pitch for us, like I said. Now, just to go back for 1 second, some of the words that they use over here on this other slide, sales collateral, go-to-market models, you know, training, center of excellence. So some of these words are quite jargony, okay? So what they really mean for us, though, is that you both have the wording of the actual pitch, or if we're talking about writing for magazines, it's the template, or the process of filling in the pitch, whatever that is, that you have honed. You have honed it so it takes less time, but you've also honed it so that it's maximally effective, okay? And then something interesting that sales teams will do is that the sales management, particularly, you know, if it is going to be a larger company where they have lots of different salespeople working in a lot of different settings, they spend a lot of money on sales trainings, okay? They will bring people in from all over the country or the world and have these big launch events for several days in cool cities where they introduce the new products the company is going to be selling. They talk all about them and they educate the salespeople on the products so that they know the products really well. They know the different types of questions that customers might ask. They also know the quote-unquote go-to-market model. We saw that on the last slide. That means the best way for this particular product to be presented to the market. So in our case, that might mean, I've actually talked to some people about this recently, that when you're presenting yourself and your experience in an LOI, it's going to be different than the way that you present yourself and your experience in a pitch to a consumer magazine. So it's going to be different for consumer versus trade, and different from how you present yourself to a job ad, and different from how you would present yourself in a cold pitch to a company to do their content marketing, okay? So this idea of the go-to-market model is what is the way, what is the sort of proven, if you can, if you've done it before and you know it works, but otherwise, what is the streamlined process way that you are going to present yourself in each of these scenarios, okay? And how can you then practice that and make sure that it becomes easy and second nature? Now, I just want to back up for 1 second, and like I said, look at this idea of sales versus marketing. I hope that from the last few slides, you're getting this sense that sales, like I said, is the things that involve money. It's the things that come right before money. It's having a conversation with somebody about the benefits of working with you by phone or over email. It's specifically presenting your expertise or your background and how you're uniquely qualified for this thing, and it leads to sales, okay? Now, things that are not directly leading to sales, but they lead to sales eventually, that fall into marketing, are getting the, whether it's, you know, words or images, whatever, having something out there that allows sales to trickle into you. See, it's kind of like a trickle down funnel here, okay? So that might mean things that happen on a website. It might mean people who see you listed in some sort of directory somewhere. It might mean people who've seen an article that you've written somewhere. It might mean people who are looking for writers on LinkedIn and come across you, okay? And those people only become actual leads that matter to a salesperson once they're ready to pay you. Okay, this is a really important differentiation to think of also in terms of how you spend your time, because if you spend a lot of time on people who are just kind of talking to you in a marketing way, like they're just looking for information and they're never going to lead to a sale, but you tell yourself, oh, like this is going to be a sale, like I'm going to work on this, I'm going to keep talking to this person, then you can really kind of delude yourself about where your time is going and also miss out on the opportunity to focus on things that could be sales. So we're going to talk more about this next time, but you can see that there's also a loop here. So once a lead becomes qualified, is ready to spend money, it goes down here into sales. But once somebody has purchased, or maybe if they said that, you know, really it's not going to be right now, then they go back up here. They go back into marketing. Okay, and we're going to talk about nurturing next webinar. Okay, so in terms of sales strategies, there's really three different things that happen, okay? So when I say sales strategies here, I'm talking right now about different buckets, okay? So sales strategies kind of go into these three buckets of, is this work that is coming from someone who has never purchased you before? Is this work that is coming from someone who has purchased something from you, but you want to try to sell them something else? Or is this something that you are doing to help to get more work from people who are currently leads but aren't yet closed? So let's talk about what that looks like for freelance writers, okay? So new sales from new clients. This would be the very, very simple one to think of, is new pitches to new magazines. Magazines you have never, ever, ever pitched before, okay? And I'm gonna use magazine example for this because it's really easy to look at this from the magazine perspective, but we can also look at it from a different way after. But let me just do all three as magazines, okay? So new pitches for new article ideas to brand new magazines. So this is something that's gonna get you in with a new client, okay? Now, what happens if you get a yes and you do an article idea for that editor into an assignment and you turn it in and then you send her a new article idea? Then now you're working on getting new sales from existing clients because this person has already paid you money in the past, so now they're an existing client, okay, or at least a past client, okay? The next thing here, though, strategies to improve the conversion rate of existing leads. So let's say you have pitched a magazine editor and they have, politely declined and given you some reason and said, we're covering this in an upcoming issue already. Thank you so much for your pitch. Like, please pitch us again anytime. What would be a strategy to improve the conversion rate of existing leads? In this case, if you're getting a lot of those emails, that's a little tough, right? Because how can we possibly know what the editor is going to publish, right? That's not listed anywhere, obviously, because then their competitors would steal it. So a strategy to improve the conversion rate of an existing lead like that might be that you want to have your next pitch for every editor ready by the time you send the current pitch, so that if they get back to you with a really nice no like that, you can literally in minutes send them a polished pitch about a new article idea, because then that's going to wow them, and then they're going to have just written you, they're going to remember you, they're going to remember that you liked that they liked your article idea, and that can improve your conversion rate rather than sending them a new pitch in a couple days or a couple weeks when that good feeling that they had about you isn't so fresh in their mind. So this can work also, of course, for more content marketing type clients. So obviously sending new things to new clients, that's going to be when you're just sending cold pitches. If you have a company that you're working with, say you're doing blog posts for them, getting new sales from them might be asking if you can do their social media or do their newsletter, or if you can do a new different type of series of blog posts. So you can also look at if there's people that you've talked to in the past and the deal didn't go through. What can you change? What kind of tactics or strategies can you implement to maybe go back to those people and take that across the finish line? Is there maybe some different way you could call them and say, hey, I just found out these really interesting new tactics about how content marketing can directly lead to, new ROI using this thing that HubSpot has published. Can I just chat with you about it on the phone? If it's not going to work for you right now, no problem, but I had thought of you when I heard about it, and I'd love to share it with you and have a chat and see what's going on with your business. Okay. Now, these six things that I have here, I wanted to give you as the actual actions or strategies that you can do for sales. Because again, I want to be really clear about what's the difference between sales and marketing here. And I think it's really easy to feel like when we are working on our website, when we're working on our LinkedIn profile or social media or all of these things, that we are in fact working on sales. But these are the things, it's only variations of these, okay? These are the things that are actually sales actions, okay? Researching and qualifying prospects. Again, these are together. So researching means not just reading magazines, but reading a magazine and actively deciding if this is a magazine that you're going to pitch and why, and gathering information about it that will lead to a pitch, okay? Cold calling or emailing, pitching. Now, the reason these two are different here is that people, when they say pitching, they mean that you are sort of physically interacting with someone and giving them your pitch. So it might be that you have sent, an introduction email, whether it's for content marketing or for trade magazines or something like that, would fall under cold calling or emailing. Whereas pitching is where you actually have a product, which in our case would be an article idea that you're pitching them. Okay, that's the difference between those two. Giving a sales presentation or demonstration. This would be the kind of thing like I just mentioned, where you might find a previous content marketing prospect that didn't work out and say, hey, I've discovered this cool new thing that can help you. Can I call you and talk about it? Closing techniques. This is a sales strategy in and of itself. I know I talk to you guys a lot about how to end your emails, and in our email pitches, then we're actually closing there in the email. But a closing technique can also be a separate email. Okay, so like what if you have a magazine editor, for instance, that you've been going back and forth with about an article idea, and they're just not saying, here, can you have it to me by, you know, July 25th at 2,000 words at 200, you know, that's too little money, but at $800. So a closing technique would be a very firm way to say, hi, Sarah, I know we've been going back and forth about this article idea for the last couple weeks. You know, I have some trips coming up and some other work in my schedule. Can we please get a deadline and a contract going for this article idea by Friday? Okay, that would be a closing technique. It's very firm. It's a closed question. Okay, account management policies. I was really excited to see that when I was looking up these different stages. So account management policy. This means policy means something that you decide in advance, that's continuous, that applies at all times to all things, right? So, you know, we talk about having human resource policies or legal policies or accounting policies, but an account management policy means the way that you maintain the relationship with your client on an ongoing basis. So this is going to be something with existing clients, okay, and how you maintain it on an ongoing basis. So you might have a policy that you write for yourself that with every client, at the 3-month mark, you evaluate whether this rate makes sense for you, if you want to continue with them, da da da. At the 6-month mark, that's when you will always ask them for more work, whether it's more of the same type of work or more of a different type of work. At the 9-month mark, that's when you're going to ask them for a raise in rates. Okay, that might be one type of account management policy that you have from a sales perspective. Okay, now, quick buzzword break here. I know we're getting to the end of our time. I'm going to get into the sales pipelines that I was talking about showing you and then close out with a couple quick tips. So inbound sales versus outbound sales. Okay, I want to make this differentiation. We're going to look at it more in the marketing webinar. But inbound sales is when people have found you and come to you and said, I would like this. Can we talk about how I can pay you for it? So this is when someone has found you on LinkedIn or whatever, and then they write you and they come to you and they say, can you do this for me? Outbound sales is when you write to someone, whether that's an editor or a company you want to do content marketing for or whatever, and say, here is what I do. Can I do it for you? And will you pay me money? Okay, so that's the difference between those two things. Inbound is when someone comes to you. Outbound is when you somehow get yourself in front of a particular person that you would like to work with. Now, one of the big things as we looked at sales strategies, right, is this idea that you have to be collecting data, you have to be looking at the data in different stages, and you have to be making the decisions based on that data. And for salespeople, that typically takes the form of something called a sales pipeline. So a sales pipeline is kind of a visualization, if you will, so that you can see what clients are different phases, so that you can see that you have enough clients at different phases to hit your sales goals, so that you can see where you're losing different clients, so that you can see where clients are getting stuck and not moving forward in your sales process, and if there's potentially a way to change your sales process. So let's look at a couple pictures here. This one's really detailed. Again, like I said, you can see all these later on the slides, but this one is really detailed, and I wanted to put it in here for a couple different reasons. One, I want you to maybe think about all of these different things and how they apply to you. But also, I wanted to give you this so that you can use it as a baseline to create your own. You're going to see some different sales pipelines coming up that are all for different industries, but I really want you to have your own one that works for you. So I spent a lot of time talking to people about how to do this with magazines, for instance. So it might be that you have magazines that you're interested in, but you haven't pitched yet. You're working on coming up with an article idea for them, okay? Then there might be magazines that you've pitched and you're waiting to hear back. There might be magazines that you've pitched once and you got some sort of response and you're pitching them again. There might be magazines where you're in discussion with the editor about whether the article idea is going to come through. There's a lot of different stages that it can be in. You might be in production, so you might have closed the sale and you're currently doing production. And then after that, then they're going to loop back up, right? Because now there's somebody that you can make a new sale to. So here we've got discovery. This is when you first find the prospect. Pre-qualification. This is when you're deciding if you're even going to work on qualifying this person or not. So like if you pick up a magazine, for instance, and you're like, oh, this is interesting. And you make that kind of split second decision of, is this worth my time to read this magazine and see if it's a fit for me or not? All right. Qualification. This is when you're actually going to read the magazine and decide, or you're going to check on the magazine database and see if they have enough opportunities for freelancers. Solution design. In the magazine setting, this is going to be when you're deciding what ideas you want to send to this magazine. Evaluation. Does this potential solution, do these magazine ideas fit? Decision. This is when you're going to be presenting your article ideas to the editor for them to decide. Negotiation. Important step here, don't miss it. This is when we dally with them about what they're going to pay us. Closed. This is when we sign the contract. So here's a couple different ways to look at this, okay? Again, these are all from different places. I'm showing you them because they all have different attributes, okay? This one, what I like here is the numbers, okay? It's showing that if you have 200 sales come in that are qualified, again, so qualified means they've already jumped down to just about phase three here on this original one we looked at, okay? So qualified leads, we start out with 200. Then when we look at what can work with them, we get to 140. Then in terms of actual pitches, we've gotten down to 100. Then the ones that have gotten back to us, we've gotten 50. And then we've closed 20, okay? So I like this presentation in terms of looking at it numerically, how many move from one stage to next, as well as this idea of how many convert at the end, which you'll see on the top, and then the average length of the sales cycle. I also found that quite cool, okay? A couple other ones to show you here. I know this one's super difficult to read, but this is one that's kind of showcases what you can do in some of the apps that are available today. There's quite a lot. I think this particular picture is from Pipedrive. So here he has listed a suspect, so that's somebody that they're in the middle of qualifying, prospect, I'm not sure what that says. It looks like it says champion, but that sounds weird. Let me look on my slides. Then the next one is opportunity and then proposal. Okay, so it says, it does say champion. This is the person who's attached to this offer, I think. Okay, so you'll see here that they've got different companies listed that they're in the middle of qualifying. Then they have some that they're going to make a proposal to. And then this is the particular specific thing. So in our case, this might be particularly the magazine article that we're working on for them. Okay. Now this next one here, hopefully you can see better, not quite so much, but what I like about this next one, obviously the titles are a little clearer, initial contact, qualification, meeting, proposal, close. But also what they do on here that's really neat is they also talk a little bit about what the project is. Okay, so it's a 2-month project, or it's gonna take 25 hours or something like that. This is another way that you can think about it that helps you, with your sales hat on, decide where to spend your time. This is another way to look at it. So this one I really like, and I hope will kind of inspire some of you. So in the pipeline here, we start obviously with, actually I can't tell what this one is, but we've got sales qualified. I think this must be the total deals in the pipeline here. Sales qualified, sales and negotiation, sales won. Okay, so this is the composite of the sales qualified and negotiated, and excluding the ones that are won over here. Okay, so if you were to have a sheet where you know, perhaps in Excel where you can add it all up, all the pitches that you're working on, you didn't just say, here's the pitches that I had in progress, but you also put a dollar amount to them, okay? If you also said, this could potentially be a $200 article, this could be a $500 article, this could be a $2,000 article, and you had that in an Excel sheet so that you could also make decisions about which pitches you're gonna spend your time on based on how much they might pay, how would that change how you do your pitching? And then what if you added something called a lead score? We're going to get to this in a second, where you said, okay, this lead, based on my past experience with either the same magazine or magazines of the same type, let's say, you know, it's a big newsstand magazine, this particular pitch has, you know, a 75%, a 5% chance of going through. And then you multiply that potential income, so that $500 or that $300 or $2,000 by that lead score, so that percentage, whether it's 5% or 75%, and then you sorted all of the pitches that you could be working on based on that new number, the potential income times the lead score, the percentage likelihood of closing. How would that change how you spend your time pitching? And how would that change how much money you have in your bank account each month, guys? This is like a very, you can just do it in an Excel sheet. I presented kind of some fancy ways to do a pipeline here, but that's a really simple way to do it, okay? Now, I just talked about lead scoring, but there's also this idea of lead cost, which, you know, a quote-unquote proper sales team would consider. So this is how much time is it going to take you to potentially make this happen? Again, this is something that you can only know once you know how much time you spend on your pitching, So that gets us back to time tracking, okay? But if you're getting leads at conferences and you're telling yourself, oh, I'm going to this conference because I think it's going to result in X, how many leads have you gotten from conferences in the past that have turned into actual opportunities? And how much are you paying to be at that conference? And how much of what you're paying, do you really feel like you're paying just to get these opportunities versus to get the learning? So that's how you calculate lead cost. So let's say, for instance, that a certain magazine is going to take you, you know, an hour overall to put this article idea together, to familiarize yourself with the magazine, make sure they haven't covered the place before, write the pitch, so on and so forth. So that's an hour. If you know what your average hourly rate is, you can even put a numeric cost out. You can say, like, that cost me $80 or something like that. So you can say, okay, this might cost me $80, okay, to put this together, to reach out to this lead. The percentage chance of success here, let's say, is 15% based on my past experiences with similar articles. And the pay that I would get if this article lands is $1,000. So I've got a 15% chance. So for my, you know, lead score times pay, that's going to be $150. And my lead cost is $80, okay? You subtract 80 from 150 and you're still positive. That means it's worth moving ahead with that lead. So the reason I did it this way, the reason I did this $150 thing and then you subtract your lead cost, is because I took this average here. Because if you are doing a lot of pitches and your pitch craft is good, so your sales technique is good, your sales process is good, you've got a good go-to-market quote-unquote process, okay? Then overall, composite, you should be ending up with that 150 plus 150 plus 100, because you'll land one out of those, all of the ones that you pitch that are at 15%. So I know I said there's going to be a lot of math in this webinar. You don't have to care about the math that I just told you, but that calculation I just gave you. So the lead score, which is a percentage chance that this is going to close, okay, which you need to know how much of your pitches are actually closing for you to know the answer to that, okay, times the potential income you can get from this. And then you subtract your lead cost, which we can do as the amount of time you're going to put into it, times your hourly rate. If that is positive, then this is a good thing for you to spend your time on. That's a very simple way. If you just want to get into evaluating your sales without going too bonkers, that's a very simple way to get into it. Okay. Now, if sales is all about closing deals, like we talked about, and those deals need to support the goals of the company, I want, after this webinar, for you to take a little bit of time and think about what, from the way that you pursue closing deals right now, what is currently missing from that strategy for you? Is it something about how those deals tie into your goals? Is it something about closing deals? Is it something else? What's currently missing? Okay, just before I let you go, a little food for thought. Again, you can grab these off the slides later. But, oops, sorry, this one got cut off somehow. These are the elements of a sales strategy. If you want to, in your annual review or at some other time, sit down and make up a whole sales strategy for yourself, these are the elements. The goals, the budget, which is going to be time for us, right? The ideal customer profile, that's some information about the people you're going to target, whether that's, you know, magazine editors that are very busy, that are usually putting out this many articles per month for freelancers, that typically work with this many regular writers who they have, you know, in the same issue every time. A customer journey map, what is the way that you work with this prospect? We're going to look more at this in the marketing one as well. Competitive advantage, what do you have to offer that other people don't? What is your strategy for marketing to them? We're going to look at that in the next webinar. And then an action plan. So this is just the elements if you really want to sit down, take some time to put together. But these are the three simple things to focus on: conversions, growth, customer retention. If you remember nothing else from this webinar, okay, again, lead scoring, complicated, I know. Just remember that when you set aside time for sales, think about conversion, business growth, and customer retention, okay, CBC. It's like B2B, but CBC, okay? Now, this is a very, very simple sort of outline of things that everyone needs for their sales to work. Clear priorities that everyone understands, clear outcomes that everyone can measure, clear guidelines everyone can follow, and clear goals to work towards. So if you have set priorities that aren't so crystal clear that you could explain them to my 3-year-old nephew, set something clear. If you have outcomes that you want to meet that you don't have a system or you can't create a system for how to measure them, how can we make those more simple? Same thing with guidelines and goals, okay? I have this little graphic that I found that I thought you guys would enjoy. people with no goals, which is about 83% of people, versus people with goals in their heads, 14% of people. People with goals in their heads are 10 times more likely to succeed than people with no goals, okay? But people with written goals, which is only 3% of people, are 30 times more likely to succeed, okay? So take yourself to the park. It's summer, guys. Take yourself to a cafe with outdoor seating. Just spend a little time thinking about what your goals are. Because then, once you know what they are, anytime you tell yourself, okay, I'm going to work on pitching, you can think about these three things, right? How do I focus on conversions to reach that goal? How do I focus on making sure these pitches grow my business? How do I focus on customers that I can retain so that I can spend less time on sales in the future, okay? The most important thing about sales is not to get stuck in the nitty-gritty of techniques of what you can do. You figure that out after you know what path you want to be on, okay? That's what I've got for you for today. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you again soon.